Patricia Ingram's and First Edition, live from the party to launch London News 97.3 and London News Talk, 11:52 a.m.
London News Talk, 11:52 a.m. Original Talk Radio.
It's 7 o'clock. Fears that more bodies would be found after a mass suicide of a religious cult in Switzerland appear to be unfounded. 48 people died in two Swiss villages. They were members of the Canadian-based cult, the Order of the Solar Temple. The mayor of one village is claiming the bodies had been in the chalet for a day before they were set on fire. Reuters' Bob Evans says police are following two lines of inquiry.
There are two clear lines of speculation here at the moment. One is collective suicide. The other one is, one commentator on Swiss television said, cold-blooded elimination of the members of the cult living in Switzerland.
The man credited as being the inspiration for the IRA ceasefire, SDLP leader John Hume, has been given a standing ovation at the Labour Party conference. Mr. Hume told delegates his talks with Sinn Féin were essential and said unionists shouldn't worry about the peace process. Earlier, the conference voted overwhelmingly to oppose post office privatisation plans. Five people being questioned over an arson attack which left two baby boys critically ill have been released without charge. Six-month-old Billy Cunningham and his 21-month-old brother Jim suffered serious burns when their home at Seacroft in Leeds was gutted by fire. Detective Superintendent Andy Brown say they still have no idea why the family was targeted.
The information rests with the public that this isn't a car that's been stolen or a burglary which they don't wish to help the police with. There are still two very small children, innocents, fighting for their lives, and to have the decency to come forward and help the police.
A child sex killer who featured in Tuesday night's BBC Crime Watch documentary on Operation Orchid has been attacked by a fellow prisoner at Albany Jail on the Isle of Wight. Sydney Cook is believed to have a neck wound. Genetic fingerprinting has revealed that the woman who claimed to be Princess Anastasia, the youngest daughter of Tsar Nicholas, was a fraud. A Home Office forensic expert said that tests showed that Anna Anderson, who died 10 years ago, could not have been the missing princess. For Reuters Radio News, I'm Catherine Drew.
First Edition. As it's a special evening for us, we're coming to you live from the party celebrating the launch of London News Talk 11:52 a.m. at the Imagination Gallery. I'm Tricia England, and among my guests are Peter Preston, editor of The Guardian, who'll be discussing tomorrow morning's big stories this evening. Derek Malcolm will be stargazing with me as he reviews the latest film releases. Our science correspondent leads us into the future, while we predict the style and business of the fashion world with Manny Silverman. All on First Edition.
According to certain newspapers, the recession is almost over. Quite. But the real good business news comes from Straker Office Supplies. Because at Straker, we've developed a system of providing office supplies and printed stationery which can cut our customers' costs to a minimum. Some businesses waste as much as £150 per annum per office employee on office supplies and administration. So if they employ 100 staff, that's a loss of £15,000. So avoid an economic downturn. Call Straker Office Supplies on 081 648 3434. That's 648 3434.
Do we have enough policemen in London?
We don't have enough policemen anywhere.
Say that always, wouldn't you?
Of course.
You've got to be a politician too, really, don't you?
Not a party politician.
No.
Policing is highly political because it touches so many people's lives.
There's a forecon on the Metropolitan Police Commissioner, and as we said, you can offer your comments as well.
Cameron and Hayes on London News Talk, 11:52 a.m., where London bites back. Patricia Ingrams on London News Talk, 11:52 a.m.
There you are. You get S's in stereo. Now, we're carrying on one of the best traditions of First Edition by asking the editors of national newspapers what they'll be leading with tomorrow morning in their First Editions. And Peter Preston, editor of The Guardian, is here to do just that this evening. Now, Peter, the main story that's horrified everybody, I imagine, is just going to have to be these
cars. Yeah, it's not a very, in a sense, archetypal Guardian story, but the 48, maybe more, dead in Switzerland is an amazing mystery story. We've got people out in Switzerland and in Canada looking, doing a complete beat-up on Luc Jouret, the man supposedly behind all of this. And the copy, as I left the office to come over here, coming into the paper, was really very graphic stuff. It's like Waco. It just boggles the mind. You can't see how it's possibly come about.
And what I can't understand, and I imagine most people will have difficulty with, is how can one person, seemingly one person, exercise such control over other people that he takes away from them that instinct for self-preservation, that's what it turns out to be.
It's fair to say that there is still a great deal of sort of mystery about quite where he is. Is he dead? Is he in Canada? Nobody quite knows. This is the sort of the business of the night. But certainly if you're looking back at previous cult leaders and looking at this, you're saying this is obviously a remarkable man with a remarkable power. And I couldn't understand it with Waco. I still can't understand it. I can't see how you exercise that degree of control over, by all accounts, a sort of a multinational crew of people, some of them very intelligent, now all lying strewn across Switzerland, some of them tied up, some with bags over their heads. It's a horrendous story, and it's deeply, you know, it sort of reaches to the innermost part of it. You can't understand it.
Absolutely right, and it is the fact that it's so widespread, isn't it?
That's right.
Adds another dimension.
And in a sort of curious way that it's Switzerland.
Mm.
You're used to this sort of thing, in a way, happening in Texas, or where sort of Wacky Waco and all of that. Here, in the sort of land of sort of cheese with holes in it and sort of solemn burgers sort of dancing in lederhosen, suddenly to find all of this going on, perfectly naturally. One of those places, 17 miles from Lausanne, sort of Charlie Chaplin land, sort of big villas, peaceful people sort of pottering around, and then this degree of carnage. It adds a sort of different flavour to the story. It's very, very peculiar.
Peter, we've heard about laws and controls and so on governing cults, or trying to govern cults in different parts of the world. Have your reporters, your correspondents, come up with whether or not there are any kinds of controls like that in Switzerland?
They were not.
We didn't know they were there.
I don't think the Swiss were prepared for this kind of stuff. It is just so difficult. You're talking about religions, you're talking about prescribing particular versions of religions. It's an issue that governments back away from traditionally. There's no effective way of doing it. And yet you say, looking at all of this, here is a cult dedicated to the end of the world and collecting weapons, supposedly, for the end of the world. Now, you'd have thought filling in a form in Switzerland, purpose of cult to collect weapons for end of world, that something would have rung a bell, but no. And how do you legislate? How do you put the rules down? It's something we're going to be talking about for a long time.
Yes, it is, isn't it? It's not one of those stories that's going to get a five-minute wonder and then go away.
No, and it's not clear now what's happening, but it's unrolling. It's just one of those stories that I think everybody will be sort of reaching for and saying, tell us some more. What's going on?
Yes, because you said it's not an archetypal Guardian story at all, but it's all a question of approach where you're concerned.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's talking, it's trying to find out, and it's trying to explain, and that's what we'll be doing.
That's not the only unfortunate story of today.
This is a very unarchetypal Guardian day, because they're again on the outside of the paper is a story which was almost as amazing, I thought, from France, where you may have heard last night a couple of kids, we don't know their names, wearing masks, broke into a police compound, tear gassed a couple of policemen, took a lot of automatic weapons, and set out on a sort of manic chase across Paris, killed three policemen and a taxi driver, wounded six more and pedestrians. Big scenes in Paris today as the taxi drivers protest and demand protection from the government. An escalating debate with the French saying, hang on, this is... it's like a video nasty, only worse, and pointing to a couple of films now showing in the Champs-Élysées, which have precisely this kind of manic killing on behalf of a sort of Bonnie and Clyde couple of kids, a line which, looking at Paul Webster's copy a few moments ago, struck me as sort of totally resonant, a right-wing leader in the French National Assembly calling to bring back the guillotine. Just think about that as a line, bring back the guillotine. And if you're stepping back, you're saying, this is a French movie. So those of us who are old enough to sort of do Belmondo and Jean Seberg and Abou de Souffle and sort of straight on through, we know sort of manic kids killing French films. It's archetypal. And I was nice reading imitating. The copy and thinking, Christ, are they going to sign up Beatrice Dahl to play the girl in the movie version opening at your local cinema very soon? Because again, it's a very sort of resonant sort of story, eerie.
What happens in your conferences when you're looking at a story like this and how to approach it, how to take it on?
Well, you're looking to try to say, where are the resonances? Sometimes, as with the Swiss story, there are so many dead that in a sense the story is automatic, it leads itself. But in terms of this French story, when I read it, I said we must do something with that, because it has, you know, for Guardian, for anybody who's ever seen a French movie, it has so many resonances. This is somehow French reality echoing back French movie reality to itself. And I think a lot of people will take it as not just a sort of mad crime story, but as something which says something about the psyche of a nation without being too pretentious about it.
Your leader page is going to be interesting tomorrow then, isn't it?
There's a bit of that, and there's certainly a lot of cults.
Yes, I find that... I'm sorry to keep harping back to that one, but it's one that just completely stunned, I think, everybody who heard it today.
That's right. I mean, and one cult after another, we're going to have a lot more of this.
Peter, I want to go on talking to you, if you don't mind. We need to break for a moment or two. I want to carry on with you because I know you've got some other really rather interesting stories for us coming up in just one moment.
Isn't this paradise? Just imagine how cold it is in England now. It's October.
October? We shouldn't be here.
What?
We should be at Burrell's Wharf, Westbury Road, on the Isle of Dogs.
Burrell's Wharf?
Yes. On October the 8th and 9th, Galliard Homes are offering superb quality apartments for sale with prices starting at only £45,000. And Burrell's Wharf has its own private swimming pool with a health and fitness centre.
How do we get more details?
Ring Message Plus on 081-553-6210.
What are we waiting for? Let's go to Burrell's Wharf.
There have been a lot of changes over the last 25 years at Jeeves of Belgravia, and good service is still our first priority. You'll find the finest dry cleaning, with attention to detail that's second to none, and Jeeves staff are specialists in every step of the process. You'll also find quality shoe and garment repair, including reweave, and a fast shirt laundry, all at a price that might surprise you. Jeeves of Belgravia. There are branches throughout London. Look us up in Yellow Pages.
Tricia Ingrams on London News Talk, 11:52 a.m. Original Talk Radio.
And as you can probably hear, we've got quite a lot of original talk going on in the background because it's our launch party for our new station this evening. And Peter Preston has joined me in the studio. And Peter, we were talking earlier about two overseas stories and the next one. Would you believe it's another story?
It's a heavy night on the overseas front, and this one with a good deal of political resonance. Good news for travellers to Italy, because the lira fell out of bed again today, but for a baroque sort of reason. Borrelli, the Milan special prosecutor, said almost directly that he was investigating Berlusconi, the new Italian prime minister and macro media mogul, the Italian justice minister went ape and threatened to resign, and there have been demonstrations of all sorts in Rome during the day. And the interesting thing about this is the way that Italy hasn't solved its problems. Berlusconi, obviously a very commanding guy in the media, but also very close to Benito Craxi, the ex-socialist leader and prime minister, now believed to be living in Tunis, with the police looking for it. And he was not a protege of Craxi's, but very, very close to him. Elected as Mr. Clean, and the special prosecutors, the guys who over the last 2 years have really peeled Italian political society down to the bone, produced a massive revulsion, are keeping going. And the difficult thing is that the new prime minister, the supposed head of the new regime, the clean-up gang, is now deep in the mire himself, with really sort of furious interchanges going. So watch Italy. It's a great place to go for a holiday, but the body politic is beginning to fall over the shop.
Beginning to? I mean, I've never got to grips with Italian politics because it seems to metamorphose. I can never say that, but you know what I mean.
It doesn't seem to have
a constant at all, and never does seem to have done. But this is really fascinating, this one, isn't it?
It's fascinating because what you actually seen in Italy over the last 2 or 3 years, basically, in my view, because of the end of the Cold War, and Italian politics had been created in the sort of to keep the communists out, which meant that the old Christian Democrats had, at whatever cost, to be kept in power. End of the Cold War, that's no longer necessary, and gradually everything starts to flake and fall apart, and is shown to have been really, in every respect, totally rotten. And the Christian Democrats are wiped out. Mafia links, former prime ministers facing endless prison charges, the whole thing completely berserk, and pursued by a variety of lawyers, special prosecutors in the big cities, especially in Milan, who are just going to keep going and showing how the mafia is involved in this, how political parties are part of an organized rake-off. Even the communists, so the communists are bag carriers for the Christian Democrats, collecting bribes for business contacts.
You couldn't write it as fiction, could you?
It is the most amazing story. All of that is swept away by the general election, the supposed clean-up election, but what emerges from it in a sort of dramatic sweep is this media-led party, Berlusconi, the sort of Ruperto Murdoch of Italian politics, and suddenly with the neo-fascists and with a Northern League who are a sort of clean-up party, cutting apart from it. It's a very spatchcock coalition. They're falling apart, and the prosecutors, who are really the opposition, they're emerging as the Italian opposition, don't trust the new politicians. Paolo Berlusconi, Berlusconi's brother, is on the run almost, under investigation, and now they're moving on to the Prime Minister himself, and you can feel the whole thing cracking. It's going to be a fascinating second phase, and so disappointing for us who thought that with any luck Italy had cleaned itself up and was now democratically going to move on.
But there are going to be repercussions, aren't there? I mean, it's not just an Italian story. It's going to have its
effect. This is not just an Italian story. It has all sorts of repercussions. One mini little Italian repercussion to hang on to is the fact that our own dear government during the summer was thinking that Mr. Berlusconi would be a very suitable partner for it in a European context, in as a counterweight to the Franco-German axis. Yes. Now, I don't know whether Mr. Berlusconi is going to be around long enough to help Mr. Major fight the gallant fight, but we'll have to see.
Talking of axes, can we take ourselves up to the Labour conference? Because that, I'm sure, is occupying your mind as well.
Oh, yeah. Hugo Young is writing another column. There's a leader, and there's a great deal. What everybody's waiting in Blackpool today to find out was whether Tony Blair's macro attack on Clause 4 was going to lead to sort of the party falling all over the shop in the familiar fashion today. Absolutely not. All the reports say that he's immediately pulled it up. Nobody's very worried. It's almost sort of torpid and bored. Everybody is going around not worrying about Clause 4. So to that extent, it's a triumph. I just sort of, however, began to sort of worry about this halfway through, because Mr. Blair may have been a bit too clever. I think his spin doctors were, in a sense, looking for a sort of gallant period of 3 or 4 weeks where Dennis Skinner and Tony Benn and Arthur Scargill waged a sort of left-wing token fight against it, so the mighty forces of Blairism could crush the left in another symbolic demonstration of this or that. Actually, most of the left seems to have sort of laid down almost immediately, and all of the attention is immediately coming on to, okay, we'll scrap, we're committed to write a new description of what the party's for and about, which doesn't mention the old formulation of Clause 4. But there's already beginning to be a sort of hot debate about what the new formulation would say. The fight to save Clause 4 is over. The debate about what it ought to say, it has started already. We're sort of slightly whipping this up because we've asked a whole variety of luminaries, sort of Ben Elton to Shirley Williams to Sue Slipman. To say what they think the new constitutional statement ought to say.
Any words you'd care to slip to us, Peter, on that?
No. Well, fairness, responsibility, community, you've got the lot. But I just feel that with a sort of Christmas deadline, if Tony Blair isn't careful, he's going to have sort of November and December of fairly catatonic boredom with people debating whether community and responsibility should be responsibility and community.
Well, Peter, I'm dead against catatonic boredom, so let's lighten life a little in a moment or two, because I want to talk to you about a particular movie I know you know about. You know an awful lot more about it than I do, which is most unfair. I have hear from you about that in a moment or two.
This year, millions of people will have their hearing impaired and may suffer discomfort or even pain. The cause? Earwax. Now, there's a new answer to problem earwax. Otex eardrops. New Otex is clinically proven to reduce the need for syringing. Its unique dual-action formula not only softens hardened earwax, but actually helps it fragment and disperse. Ask your pharmacist about new Otex. For clearer ears, there's been no better news in years.
Contains urea hydrogen peroxide. Always read the label.
Win a home through the Evening Standard keyhole. Win a superb three-bedroom house with garage quality built by Barrett. Or win a luxury Barrett Thameside apartment with two bedrooms, fitted kitchen, and carpeted throughout. Pick up a game card from your newsagent or Evening Standard office and place over the grid in the Evening Standard. Reveal 6 keys and win a home worth over £100,000, plus hundreds of cash prizes must be won. 2 homes and £50,000 cash must be won through the Evening Standard keyhole. Game cards available all this week, no purchase necessary.
Tricia Ingrams on London News Talk, 11:52 a.m.
At our launch party with Peter Preston, editor of The Guardian. And as it's a party, let's have some fun now, please, Peter. Forrest Gump.
Yeah. Derek Malcolm, who I can sort of see distantly through a window waving a glass of champagne, is going to be coming in to tell you what he thinks.
Preempt him.
Of Forrest Gump. Well, I've read his review, but I'm not going to spoil it for him. He likes it. He's had a good time. You'll find out banging on about 142 minutes being rather long. But I think Derek belongs to the school, which I too belong to, that any film over 96 minutes tends to drag a bit. But otherwise, he had a terrific time. And he'll tell you about it. What I was interested in, looking at the sort of whole presentation in Screen Guardian tomorrow, was a collection the guys have made of Gumpisms, which is clearly going to sort of run alongside the film, which has been a box office super smash, the hit of the season in America, and is clearly going to do very well.
Gumpisms.
Well, in short order, here is Forrest Gump's Tom Hanks, a sort of a guy with a very low IQ, a sort of Rain Man, but also Mr. Everyman, wandering through modern America, meeting presidents, doing things, uttering statements, a sort of purity. Sort of, if you can think of sort of, I don't know, Jimmy Stewart in Mr. Deeds Comes to Washington and take 50 points off James Stewart's IQ. There's that sort of Capra-esque feel to it. Gump sort of says obvious things which have a sort of native wisdom to them. I've got one which I wrote down, which this is Gump. Let me say this, being an idiot is no box of chocolates. And we've had a whip round with some authors and collected a few more what could be Gumpisms, of which I have two to talk about. One from Naomi Campbell, which is Mediocrity Killed the Cat, and another from Annika Rice, which says, some people, like me, are born stupid, but many more become stupid as they go along. And you can see some Gumpisms taking off. Actually, Simon Hoggart, our sketch writer in Blackpool, the day before yesterday, was beginning, before everybody bowed down and said, Tony Blair is absolutely ace, what a magnificent speech, was beginning to sort of produce a parallel between Tony Blair and Forrest Gump. As the sort of innocent wisdom, pusher of wisdom in a sort of bright-eyed, straight-on sense. And I was thinking as I was reading this, if the speech had been less good, phrases like we must say what we mean and mean what we say could have been a Gumpism. Tony was on the knife edge, I think, of being that, taking off as the Forrest Gump.
To be honest now, did you feel cheated of a Gumpism out of the speech?
All the cartoonists have been looking around for a very long time saying, can we do Tony Blair and can we find an image for him? Which has resonance, and I think he's shown them a clear pair of heels this week. But I thought for at least 24 hours when Simon Hoggart called that line that Gumpism was going to be it.
Optimism was there with it for a while. Now, an interesting gear change now. London Transport, Lou.
Yes. This has been a bit of a talking point in the office through the day. It's there in the paper tomorrow. A survey of London Underground Lou's. By a proper research team. The main finding being that graffiti in ladies' loos are far worse, I can tell you, than they are, according to this research team, in men's loos.
I have to say I wouldn't know. How do you ever go to the wall?
This has been going on all the time at conferences, and at 6 o'clock we sort of looked over at our dynamic lady editors and said, can this possibly be true? To which they very sentiently replied, I don't know, we've never been into a man's loo. But anyway, this is scientific, and I think this alters my sort of view of either ladies who travel on London Underground or something, but I need to know more.
Well, what I'd like to know is it that there is more of it or it is worse?
I think it seems to be worse on both counts, but there's certainly more of it.
Isn't that strange?
It's very, very odd. Anyway, James Ehrlichman has been reading the report, and more will be there tomorrow.
I'm sure there will, but... Oh, no, you're going to tantalise me now. Please don't tantalise me too much. Is there any kind of a conclusion as to why this should be?
No, it's just one of those funny things from life. Men's loos appear to be a bit more disgusting, but that's, as I say, par for the course. But I was hoping you'd tell me. I cannot think what goes on in ladies' loos with people scrawling on the walls. I just can't see it.
No, I've never understood the whole graffiti notion, I have to admit. But there was another report published today about the lack of loo facilities at railway stations. I think it was the British Railway Station.
That's right.
And after a certain time in the evening, forget it.
Oh, it's totally hopeless. The only thing you can say is that you hit this kind of problem in the most sort of peculiar circumstances. For example, I mean, I was, story too long to go into, but by chance at Longchamp for the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe on Sunday. Desperate. Massive queues. Anybody who tells you that Longchamp is sort of leaves Ascot trailing far behind hasn't been there. The services are totally basic. Heaven knows what the Paris Metro is like, but we'll organise another survey.
Yes, let's, and then come back and please will you tell me. Peter Preston, thank you very much indeed. I've enjoyed talking to you enormously. Now, as you know, this is First Edition. I'm Tricia Ingram, so I'm looking forward to you, I hope, staying with me for the rest of our first programme here at the party. So I'm going to leave you for a moment or two, coming up to the news. Talk to you shortly.
If I told you that for just $9.95 you can save 25% off your total bill, including drinks, at more than 300 restaurants, you'd say, what's the catch? Well, with the Quartermaster Directory, there are no catches. You can enjoy real savings at restaurants including Café Rouge, Rock Island Diner, Garfunkel's, Pizza Land and Bella Pasta. Just follow the simple procedure and you'll save money. And that's guaranteed. To order your Quartermaster Directory, call 081-553-6688. That's 553-6688.
This weekend, which car rental company beginning day offers you a Vauxhall Corsa 1.2 LS for just £23 a day? A price that includes unlimited mileage, collision damage waiver, and VAT. Which car rental company beginning with A? Alamon. We aim to set the highest standard. Find us in Yellow Pages or call 0800 272 300. Alamo features Vauxhall cars.
Right, and now over to the Travel Centre. And Mark, you've got words to tell us of wisdom.
I certainly have, and I'm pleased to say, actually, that it's all looking fairly good now. Rush hour seems to be well and truly over. There will be delays, though, through the evening, I'm afraid, for those using the A4 coming into the Hammersmith area. Now, they've got roadworks on the Great West Road and the Hammersmith Bridge Road. They're underway already, and also from about 9.30 tonight, they're going to actually completely close the Hammersmith flyover for emergency repair works. They will have local diversions down via the Broadway round the roundabout, but obviously that will be very congested through the evening. The A3 much improved through Wandsworth, despite the roadworks that continue on the High Street at the junction with Ram Street, which were causing long southbound delays back to the Wandsworth Bridge at one stage at the height of the rush hour. You'll find as well, if you're travelling over towards the A406, the North Circular, the Valley Viaduct, roadworks continue there, one lane closed, likely to cause problems. And the Chiswick High Road, the A315, roadworks at the Thornton Road Junction will continue. You'll find on the motorways, much improved on the M4 and the M25, a little bit slow anti-clockwise just on the approach to the roadworks at Chertsey Junction 11, taking you down towards the A3, and coming clockwise on the Surrey section between the M23 and Reigate, mainly just up the hill there on the single lane section. On the underground, still a few delays on the Central Line, Metropolitan 9, and the Northern Line, following some problems earlier on today, but services gradually getting back to normal. Mark Newman for the London News Talk Travel Team.
London News Talk, 11:52 a.m.
It's 7:30. I'm Charles Amponsa. Experts believe the religious group behind a mass suicide may have a branch in Britain. It follows claims that members attended a gathering at Stonehenge 2 years ago. The Order of the Solar Temple lost 48 of its members in two villages in Switzerland. The man credited with being the main influence behind the IRA ceasefire has been given a standing ovation at the Labour conference. SDLP leader John Hume told delegates his talks with Sinn Féin were essential and said unionists shouldn't worry about the peace process. Five people being questioned over an arson attack which left two baby boys critically ill have been released without charge. Six-month-old Billy Cunningham and his 21-month-old brother Jim suffered serious burns when their home in Leeds was gutted by fire. A woman who claimed to be the Princess Anastasia, the youngest daughter of Tsar Nicholas, was a fraud. According to Home Office forensic experts, genetic fingerprinting showed that Anna Anderson, who died a decade ago, could not have been the missing princess. That's it. There's another bulletin at 8 o'clock.
And now it's, and let's see if I can read this clock, it's 7:32, indeed it is. And our brand new radio station, London News Talk, 11:52 a.m, has been on air for 13 and a half hours and 2 minutes. And tonight's First Edition is coming to you live from the launch party. Now that's our celebration, but who'll be celebrating in the Coca-Cola Cup second round, second leg? And among the clubs trying out are London's Arsenal, Queen's Park Rangers, Wimbledon and West Ham. Well, Richard Costavadi, how's London going to shape up tonight?
Well, pretty well. You didn't say Barnet, Tricia.
Oh, no, you didn't. Sorry, Barnet.
No, they're playing at Manchester City tonight, 1-0 up from the first leg. They play at Main Road. Great win at Underhill 2 weeks ago. So we look to them for the shock of the round, probably. Certainly as good as Mansfield's against Leeds was last night. Best of luck to them in Manchester tonight. Arsenal, they'll have no problems. 5-0 up at home to Hartlepool before tonight's game. West Ham have a problem or two. They're 2-1 behind. They play Walsall at Upton Park tonight. Queen's Park Rangers have a 1-0 lead. They play at home. Wimbledon away at Torquay and they have a 2-0 lead. They should be okay. 9 other ties as well tonight. A big night of football, and I'll bring you the scores in about an hour and 2 hours' time.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, that's good to know. Now, switching from that, John Fashanu, you whispered his name to me.
Bash the Bash. Yeah. Now at Aston Villa, the former Wimbledon striker has been charged with misconduct by the Football Association today. Well, that charge follows a complaint by Manchester United over comments that he made about their striker, the French international, Eric Cantona, in a recent newspaper article. And while we're on the subject, the FA has also charged First Division Tranmere Rovers over derogatory programme notes regarding Sheffield United, and Fashanu and Tranmere Rovers have 14 days in which to respond. It's not the first time Fashanu's been in trouble. We'll see what happens.
How do you think they're going to tackle that?
Well, it's difficult. I have seen the article, or the words written in it anyway, and he could well be in trouble. He accused Cantona of all sorts of behaviour on the pitch. Now, some people might say that Cantona is the sort of player which he was described to be. I'm phrasing my words rather carefully here. As far as the Tranmere Rovers situation goes, quite ridiculous by the FA. I can't see what they're fussing about, but that's the sort of people they are.
It's a strange relationship in football at the moment, isn't it? There seems to be so much conflict, political conflict, financial conflict, every other kind of disciplinary conflict.
Well, it makes newspaper columns, doesn't it? Fashanu was, I'm sure, well paid for this article, which appeared in the Sun newspaper, where else, after Manchester United's league win over Liverpool. No doubt he was well rewarded for that, and whatever the fee was, I don't know what it was, I doubt that if he is fined, and we don't know that at the moment, it will be anything like the amount he received in the first place. So the whole thing's a little bit of a joke, really.
Can you take me over now to racing, please?
Yes, certainly. Sad news today, but I suppose it had to happen sooner or later. Vincent O'Brien, the great Irish national hunt and flat trainer, 77 now, has announced his retirement from the sport this evening. Well, he's a man who enjoyed great success at national hunt racing before switching to the flat. Actually got his first training licence in 1943, a 51-year career, a quite incredible record on the flat after he made the switch. 44 classic winners, including 6 triumphs in the Epsom Derby. He won in Paris at the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe, and a quite amazing record. As far as the national hunt goes, 3 times a Grand National winner as a trainer, 53, 54, 55, the last man to do it 3 years in a row, 4 times in the Gold Cup at Cheltenham, 3 times as well in the Champion Hurdle. They are the great 3 national hunt races. He did it across the board. Tributes pouring in from the sport tonight. Henry Cecil himself, no mean face in this sort of thing, said, "Vincent started it all for us." And there's great shock that announcement has come tonight. Certainly the greatest trainer of all time.
And yes, as you say, great shock, great sadness as well. Now, Richard, I know you're up to your eyes this evening. I'm looking forward to you coming back. I want to find out how Barnett did. So I'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Isn't this paradise? Just imagine how cold it is in England now. It's October.
October? We shouldn't be here.
What?
We should be at Burrows Wharf, Westbury Road, on the Isle of Dogs.
Burrows Wharf?
Yes. On October the 8th and 9th, Galliard Homes are offering superb quality apartments for sale with prices starting at only $45,000. And Burrows Wharf has its own private swimming pool with a health and fitness centre.
How do we get more details?
Ring Message Plus on 081-553-6210.
What are we waiting for? Let's go to Burrows Wharf.
Do we have enough policemen in London?
We don't have enough policemen anywhere.
Would you say that always?
Of course.
You've got to be a politician too, really, don't you?
Not a party politician.
No.
Policing is highly political because it touches so many people's lives.
There's Paul Condon, the Metropolitan Police Commissioner, and as we said, you can offer your comments as well.
Cameron and Hayes on London News Talk, 11:52 a.m., where London bites back. Natasha Ingrams on London News Talk, 11:52 a.m.
I obviously don't like that man. It's very unkind of me. I'm sorry about that. He was dead right. It is Tricia Ingrams. It's first edition. We're going to be looking at finance and films separately and together in a rather confusing way, if you follow me. So, I've got Richard Shackleton on the line at the moment from Reuters Finance. Richard, good evening. Welcome to our new first edition.
Good evening, Tricia. Pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. Now, let's get on to the serious stuff first. Stock markets around the world. It's not a happy picture. 2 weeks short of the anniversary of Black Monday. Are we heading that way again?
Well, on the face of it, it looks like it, doesn't it? Because as we speak, Wall Street is down 28 points, and that's one of its worst performances for a long while. The FTSE closed in London a short while ago. That was down 45 points. Across Europe, it's very much the same sort of message with the DAX in Frankfurt. That's the German index down 26, and France down 42. So on the face of it, yes, I think you there are grounds for suspecting that we may just be about to relive the 1987 crash. But in the business world tonight on 10:30 on the FM service, you'll be hearing Roger Bootle, who's the chief economist at Midland Bank, and he says it's all horribly overdone because of what's driving the markets down at the moment is fears that inflation may just be about to take off again, both in the States and in Europe. And frankly, at the moment, he says that's very, very unlikely. So the need to raise interest rates to stop inflation going up won't be necessary, and therefore a market crash won't be necessary. So on the basis of what, as I say, our guest on the Business World Tonight is saying, it's very much overdone.
But Richard, we hear about nervous markets and so on all the time. I mean, is it really that vulnerable to somebody feeling slightly jumpy?
On a day-to-day basis, markets are very, very vulnerable to just sort of basic instinct, basic feelings, what dealers think may happen to things like inflation and interest rates. And that can send the stock indices, you know, things like the FTSE or the Dow Jones, sort of in big directions either way. And a lot of what is happening isn't actual on the ground trading. You're not actually seeing many shares changing hands. What instead is happening is dealers are marking the prices up and down. They're trying to anticipate the way we feel about stocks and shares. And rather than be caught either short or caught long with too many shares or not enough shares on their books, they change the prices. And that's why you see these very, very big moves on a day-to-day basis. Mm. But unless we do have a crash, what I think you'll find is a lot of these will sort of even themselves out over the year.
Well, Britain's exporters are finally beginning to do a bit better. A bit better. Record levels of export confidence. Are we getting things right now?
Well, it's beginning to look like it, doesn't it? I mean, the number of times we've been told export or die by the Chancellor or the Prime Minister, and we've only turned around a few years later to see the whole thing sort of cave into a soggy mess. That's happened more often than not. But this time round, I think there are grounds for optimism, because not only is the pound cheap, which makes our goods cheap abroad. If you remember, that happened because of Black Wednesday, not Black Monday this time, Black Wednesday a couple of years ago when we got booted out of the ERM. That's made our exports very attractive to foreigners. And also, what a lot of economists are saying and what a lot of British exporters are saying is that some of those really rather tough and nasty reforms that we went through under Mrs. Thatcher's administration has made Britain's industry mean and keen and very lean. And as a result, we are now very competitive against a lot of the European economies, and our goods are regarded as being cheap, good value, and we are delivering to time. And that hasn't happened for a very long time.
Richard, forgive the question, but talk to me about bananas, please.
Right, well, there's been a war practically in just about everything, apart from newspapers to television ratings, but this time it's bananas. And the European Court of Justice in Brussels has finally called a halt to the banana war. This is because the European Union at the moment imports most of its bananas from the old British and French colonies of the West Indies. Now, the Germans have complained that this is unfair because they say they can get cheaper bananas elsewhere. And they said, and they took this case to the European Court and said this is exactly what they wanted to do. Well, they've been slapped down and been told to go away because the European community has turned around and said, I think quite fairly, that the West Indian economies depend so heavily on Europeans buying their bananas. If we turned around and went elsewhere, that would just devastate their economies.
It would be funny if it weren't so important.
That's right. That's right.
David, thank you very much indeed. It's very good of you to have joined us on our launch night. I hope we'll be hearing lots more from you again pretty soon. I'm going to move now very quickly to movies. Back with you in a moment.
It can be hell getting to work unless you live where I live, a fantastic new development minutes from Canary Wharf in the city. And where do I work? A fantastic new development minutes from Canary Wharf in the city. Alphabet Works' modern open-plan fully fitted business apartments are ideal for living and working in. Ideal because Alphabet Works' business apartments start from just £38,000. Why rent business space and pay a mortgage? Combine both and save precious travelling time and money. Call Dobbin and Sullivan on 071-537-2324. That's 537-2324.
Here, I was clearing out the attic when I came across a bag of old cine films. Anyway, a neighbour told me about Black Cat Video, and they transferred them to video for me. They added titles and music and made extra copies, which I gave to the kids as presents. Oh, the memories they brought back. There was old Maureen as a baby. Well, she's got kids of her own now. Another great idea from Black Cat Video. Phone Potter's Bar 6 43,000. That's 01707 6 43,000.
Tricia Ingrams on London News Talk, 11:52 a.m. Original Talk Radio.
And it's just coming up to 7:45 now. Now, I've got an old friend here with me now. I haven't seen him for years. And it's a good evening to meet you again, Derek Markham. I mean, it's a new radio station, new program for me, and an old chum sitting in the chair next to me. Thank you for coming. I want to know what we ought to be going to see in the movies, because you always know.
Well, it's an extraordinary week, really, because the two major successes in America over the last few months are opening in the same week in England, which seems rather odd that they should bring the two big blockbusters in at the same time, but they must know what they're doing, and they're Forrest Gump and The Lion King, the new Disney film. Together, those two films have made, I think it's $550 million in America alone between them. So they're going to make a huge sum of money the world over. If I start with The Lion King, it's a kind of story rather like The Jungle Book. I think that's probably the one that everybody will remember when they go and see The Lion King. And it's really a very simple tale, very well told, like all the best Disney's. It's about a lion cub and his father. His father rules the jungle, and there's a wicked uncle who causes his father to be killed, and it's up to the lion cub to see that he rules the jungle again when he gets older. That's really a very simple story. But it's set in Africa. It's got music by Elton John, which is okay. Lyrics by Tim Rice, which are not frightfully clever, I don't think. But beautiful animation, as always with Disney, and a very good story. You know, when the whole thing opens up on the African plains with dawn breaking and the animals beginning to wake up. It's absolutely superb. And it tells its story terribly well. Some people say it may frighten younger children, and it may do, because there's a stampede in which the king of the jungle actually gets killed. The stampede has been provoked by his wicked uncle, by his brother, rather. And so, you know, that's a frightening episode, but there's a lot of sentimentality as well. It's a real family film, which everybody wants to go and see.
And it is rather the mixture as before, in a way, with Disney, because I always used to find them terrifying when I was little.
You find them terrifying?
When I was
small, you find it too terrifying, a little bit terrifying. Not as terrifying as one or two of the ones that I used to see in my youth, like Fantasia and things like that, which were very frightening in some parts of it. But it's the mixture as before, but it's very, very beautifully done. It's very orthodox. I mean, a lot of the young animators today they say Disney, oh my God, it's so old-fashioned. But actually it's what people want to see. And you know, you've got to realize that all the animals, the hyenas and